I'm a firm believer, if you build it, they will come. Everything we have pretty much is free, like social media and stuff. Now, there are sites that putting up your music costs you maybe a monthly charge or something. But if you believe in your music and you have good music and it's kind of just going out there and blowing up, people are going to come to you.
It's easy to get lost in today's music industry with constantly changing technology and where anyone with a computer can release their own music. But I'm going to share with you why this is the best time to be an independent musician, and it's only getting better. If you have high quality music, but you just don't know the best way to promote yourself so that you can reach the right people and generate a sustainable income with your music, we're going to show you the best strategies that we're using right now to reach millions of new listeners every month without spending 10 hours a day on social media. We're creating a revolution in today's music industry, and this is your invitation to join me. I'm your host, Michael Walker. All right, so I'm excited to be here today with Wishmaster Beats. So Wish is a Grammy-nominated, multi-platinum selling music producer. He's one of the pioneers of online leasing. He has worked with artists like Twista, Pitbull, Nelly, Rick Ross, 2 Chainz, Lil Wayne, and many more. And he's active in the song pitching for artists, labels, TV, music, games. And he's someone that, yeah, I think is absolutely slaying it right now, you know, in his domain in terms of who he works with. And also he's someone that I'm looking forward to having a conversation with just about the current status of the music industry and where things are headed, you know, in particular with AI and music generation tools. I think it's an interesting time to be alive and sort of witness right. How is that going to affect your world, especially and music licensing as a whole. So right. Wish, thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, man. It's awesome. I think we did this what, like 2 years ago, maybe.
It's been a hot minute. Interview.
Yeah.
It's been too long. Yeah. So maybe to kick things off, could you just share a brief introduction about how you got started and you found your way to collaborating with, you know, artists like Pitbull and 2 Chainz and Lil Wayne?
Sure. Yeah. I'll do a short version, but I basically am from Chicago. I was into like house music and hip hop, and I had a love for music because my parents used to just constantly play music in the car. So I knew I wanted to be in music. I just didn't know where. So my first place I went was a DJ. So I started DJing like house parties and did some clubs. And it was, I think that, yeah, I forgot. I was at a really big club and I played a song. I forgot the song was called, but it just drew everybody to the dance floor. And then I remember.
The Macarena.
It was I don't know if you guys remember the dip. When I dip, you dip, we dip. It was a huge song.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
And then I remember thinking to myself, I don't want to just play the music that's making these people move on the dance floor. I want to create the music. So from that day forward, I was like, you know, I was really into like Timberland, Dr. Dre, Neptunes, and 3-6 Mafia, which is it's like a little different. But I decided I wanted to be a producer, so I bought my first keyboard and I just started making beats. There, you know, we didn't have YouTube and all the things we have right now to be able to, you know, show us how to create these things. So I just kind of like listened to my favorite producers, started creating. And I loved it so much that I would just do it every day. Like I would just constantly be in my parents' basement, just like knocking out beats. And, you know, the first probably 100, pretty terrible. But I think after I got to maybe 100, they started sounding pretty good. And I decided I had some like friends that were like, you know, like, hey, they were rapping. And then I had some other, you know, their friends of rap. So I was like, you know, I started a record label, like a little record label in my parents' basement because I had a little studio set up. And we just started, you know, doing shows and I started putting stuff out. And then I was doing security at the time. And I remember I basically would just sit at a computer all day and just make sure people don't walk away with computers. There's a computer college. So I'm like, I'm going to see if a desktop computer comes out the front door, right? So I basically started searching online and looking for like what do producers do, right? So I found this website. It was called mp3.com, which is like the first SoundClick, if you guys are familiar with SoundClick. And producers would just put their beats online and they would get paid per their streams. So I was like, all right, this is cool. And I had like probably 50 beats. I'm like, I'm just going to throw all that shit up there, right? So I put 50 beats up and I started getting some streams as people started liking my stuff and I started getting paid. I got my first check was like $50 or something. I was like, man, I got 50 bucks just from putting my beats on the site. So I just kept doing it. And then one day they stopped paying people to do it. And then I remember a funny story. I remember sitting in my parents' basement and playing my music like for probably like a weekend straight. Like every second I would just keep playing myself because I'm like, I'm getting paid for this. I did not know about, you know, cookies and IP addresses. So I pretty much spent hours playing my stuff and only one, you know, would count per day. So I decided from there, because they stopped paying us, I was like, oh, wait, I have a, you know, they had like a internal like messaging system, right? Like an email thing. And I went in there and I had like all these messages from like different artists, and they're like, hey, how much do you want for this beat? Or I love your beats. And I was like, all right. And look it up. And I'm like, all right, this guy wants to buy this beat. And I'm like, all right, I didn't really know about like exclusive rights or any of that stuff. So I was like, all right, I guess you just sell it outright. So I sold my first beat outright. I looked at my phone bill, it was $50. So I was like, all right, $50. So I sold my first beat for $50. And then from there, I just kept going through messages and putting up more beats. And then people would just constantly just message me and saying, hey, like how much you want for this beat? I went up to, I probably got up to like $3,000 per beat. And that was just from independent artists. And I was killing it. And I decided to quit my job as security and just do music full time. And then from there, the economy hit, I remember, and people didn't have as much money. So like it was selling exclusive rights, like it got down to like, you know, $400 or $500, and artists would complain and be like, dude, I can't afford this. So that's when I came up with the idea for licensing. I'm like, well, why don't I just sell the same beats over and over again, give them the license power. It doesn't kill their budget. And they can still make money. I still make money, and we're all happy. When I started doing that is when my fan base just blew up. I mean, different countries everywhere around the world were just messaging me like, dude, you're the best. And like just buying my stuff up because I could afford it. Right. So from there, that's when I got started getting notices by bigger artists and bigger companies. And I remember my first big gig was Midway Games. And I got emailed by that guy, John Benyaki, who was running I forgot exactly his position, but he was doing the video game. He's like, hey man, I got this one of a kind video game. It's called NBA Ballers. And it's different than any other game. You play basketball, but you also live the lifestyle of a basketball player, and you like upgrade your chains, your mansions, your cars, and all that stuff. I was like, that sounds cool. So they happened to be in Chicago, which is cool. So he took me on a tour, and he's like, we want this to be like real underground. I know you're really big online. So I end up doing like 25 beats and like five songs, and I got a check for like $25,000. So that was like my first big, you know, check from a big company. So it was pretty exciting. And then from there, I started working with like Ludacris. I worked on his Disturb the Peace album. And then I got noticed by a rapper named Nelly out of St. Louis. And then his production company wanted to sign me. So I ended up moving to St. Louis, working with him full time. And then I started getting noticed by other people. So I was just getting played. You know, that's when you see all these like different placements I had. They just start coming in. And then I did a song called I'm on a Boat by the Lonely Island. That happened to be, I was in Nelly's studio. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was a pretty big song. And that was just like a situation where I happened to be at Nelly's studio, and there's somebody coming through looking for beats from Universal Republic. And I ended up giving them that, and ended up being I'm on a Boat. And then from there, I just kept, you know, growing and growing. I moved to Los Angeles, and then I got into education, and I wrote the first beat making program for a college in St. Louis. So, yeah, and I've done a lot of stuff since then. I don't want to go too crazy into the story, but yeah.
Hey, dude, that's awesome. Well, congratulations on your success. And yeah, I love hearing stories like that in full detail. Cause just like the transformation, you know, is so huge from when you just started out and you're in your parents' basement, you know, making those songs. Right. Yeah, I'd be curious, you know, for you, if you could go back in time and you could go back to yourself when you just got started, maybe at like your most rock bottom challenging moment. I don't know if you remember what that was for you.
Oh, there's tons of them.
Yeah. It so whatever that was for you, you know, if you could give yourself one piece of advice based on what you know now, what would you share with yourself back when you know,
I would just say, don't listen to what people tell you, you know, the ones that you're supposed to listen to, like these high end managers supposedly, or entertainment lawyers. Sometimes they give you the wrong information. My biggest mistake in my career is I stopped doing online stuff. So when that all started happening, I was like, I still had my online business, but I was like, man, I want to work with big artists. Like, this is cool. I enjoy it, but this is like, you know, this is my dream. And I remember I had management in LA, and they're like, dude, you got to quit that shit. Like, you don't want to be known as an online producer. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be known as an online producer. Like, that sucks. So I stopped doing it. And now it like to this day, I'm like, oh my God, if I would have kept my SEO going on my website and still had beats online, I mean, it'd be insane what I would have, you know what I mean? And do the offline stuff. And I'm like, what is a online producer anyway? I'm like, why did that even bother me? Like, I'm sitting there like, online producer, like, who gives a shit? Like, but back then it's like they made me feel like it was a small thing to do. And I think I have learned that I've listened to so many people giving me the wrong information and just try to guide me to do just, you know, what they think is right, instead of me just following my heart and knowing it was right. So
man, that's really powerful. That's some really good advice. Yeah. How do you distinguish between Yeah, because sometimes, you know, feedback is good, and sometimes constructive feedback is right, and you know you want to be open minded and kind of learn from other people. How do you distinguish between the type of advice that, like you're describing, is sort of the people downplaying something that in your gut or in your heart, like you know, is right, versus something that actually is, you know, a good piece of advice that maybe is worth considering?
So I guess it just depends on the person, and like, what is your, you know, where is this coming from? Is this like, did you just blast music out there and all of a sudden a bunch of people are like started sending you hate mail or something? Like, that's, you know, that's a different, where I'm like, that's different feedback, because there's people that have personal problems going in their life. And I'm sure you notice with, like, we have email lists, and when we send stuff out, you get people like, I just posted something. Some dude told me to go kill myself, right? And I'm just giving away free beats. And he's like, go kill yourself. And I'm like, that wouldn't be constructive criticism, right? It's like, and you are going to get people that are going to hate on you, especially like as artists and in music, and you can't take that personally. But if you're talking to someone, let's say like Michael, who's in the music business, and you trust his opinion, and he says, hey man, I like your song, but I would try maybe some different production, or maybe try a harmony here or something. That would be constructive criticism. They're like, okay, I'm going to take that to heart. I trust his judgment. I know what he does. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or if I'm working with an artist or a producer in the studio or something, I know they're not there to be like, you know, trying to put me down. You know what I mean? They're there to make music. We all eat, right? Whatever we create, that would be the constructive criticism that I would take in, of course. So I guess it just depends on your environment and where it's coming from.
Mm, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah. Yeah. And I know in particular, like one of the points you just spoke to is really relevant to all of us as artists around criticism, or like putting something out, and the trolls, you know, like the trolls, especially on the internet, they come out. And
oh, of course.
How do you recommend? Yeah, we touched on this a little bit, but I'd love to hear going a little bit deeper on this, because I know this is like a big pain point for a lot of our artists, is dealing with negativity or dealing with trolls or your feedback, even if it's from people who are just literally like, go kill yourself. Like, obviously that's real bad.
Yeah, right.
Like,
exactly.
Most people are like, okay, they generally, hopefully, you know, we don't take that too much to heart. But especially with some artists who are earlier on, you know, in their journey, when they're still discovering their voice, they're still, you mentioned how at the beginning of your journey, like all of us, you know, you made a bunch of beats, and a lot of them weren't very good. You were kind of figuring out your voice and how to get better at it. And I'm curious, how do you recommend that artists, you know, look at trolls or look at negative feedback that they get, in particular if it's feedback that really just kind of cuts through? Because in some cases, like, there might be an ounce of truth to some of the things that people are saying.
Yeah.
And that's part of what makes it challenging to face sometimes. But also, yeah, it's like it's not something to dwell on or to take personally. Right.
So basically, you have to put your music out there, right? You can't just let it sit there, or you're not doing anything. You're just gonna have regrets. You know what I mean? So like, if I took any, like, even some of the beats I wasn't unsure of, even after that 100, there's some in there I'm like, I don't know, but if I didn't try, I wouldn't know what was going to do good or whatnot. You know what I mean? As an artist, when you're putting your music, you know, you put your music out there. If you are getting a lot of negative feedback, it's either your audience is horrible and they're not meant for you. You know what I mean? Are you making music for, like, you know, alternative Nirvana type, you know, or do you make Nirvana type music and you have a bunch of rappers that are following you or listening to? That would be like, you know, they don't listen to that stuff, right? Or are you doing like hardcore hip hop and you're giving it to like some people that are like spoken word, you know what I mean? Or Christian, Christian crowd. You have to really know your audience, but that's how you find your audience too, is you have to try put it out there. And if you're getting some negative feedback, but anybody who's like, shouldn't be malicious, right? If someone's being malicious saying you suck, that's like, that's horrible feedback. That's like, there's something else internally going on with that person. If someone's like, hey, I really like your voice, but I don't like the way you're doing this or something, and actually giving you some criticism with some detail, I take that stuff in, and that's the stuff I'm like, okay, cool, thank you. And you could either change it or you can see what other people say as well. But I, like I said, I'm looking for more people that like, give me some detail or something. If someone's saying something like horrible or saying trash, like, I know that's like the biggest word, someone put trash or something, like, that's not positive feedback. That's someone that has some internal shit going on with them, and they're just like, just a negative type person. That's how I look at them. But you have to try, put your stuff out there. And I would say, even as an artist, even in the beginning, you have to learn marketing too, because that's how you find your audience. You know what I mean? So.
Awesome. Yeah. Great stuff. So in terms of, in terms of the opportunities that are like kind of opening up right now, one way that I look at the industry is that it's sort of like catching waves. We're like surfers in the sense that certain opportunities, like the internet, when the internet first came out, sort of like a big wave in the ocean. And if you swim along with it, then you can kind of hit that momentum when it's first coming out. So you might get a boost. And there's a lot of opportunities that have already passed. And we might spend a lot of time and energy trying to catch up to something that, you know, isn't quite the opportunity that it used to be. Like, I don't know, like radio, for example. I'm curious I'm wondering what, if you kind of sense anything right now, like generally I love to take the approach of imagining that we're, you know, surfers, we're sitting on the waves, and you can start to feel some of those waves that are coming or some of those trends. And if you swim along with them at the right time, then you have this opportunity that like you can really gain some massive momentum or boost. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, like you described with the internet, the online thing, it can be challenging because there's not a lot of proof. There's not a lot of, you know, evidence yet that the thing is a thing because it's an upcoming wave. Right. But, you know, if you are in tune with it, you can use those opportunities to get more, you know, get a boost. So that's a long-winded way of asking, what do you see right now as like some of the biggest trends or opportunities that if you were starting from scratch and you were looking to grow your audience and build a successful music career that you'd go all in on?
Well, some of the things I didn't have, well, I did have them, I just didn't know that, but is I didn't educate myself. So like a lot of things that like I could have had, I didn't know what they were. So like, I didn't understand publishing. I didn't understand what management did. I didn't know what record labels really did. I just thought it's like doing music, get signed, rich, you know what I mean? Or whatever. I think that's how it works. Yeah. So there's such a wide array right now of education, even like through, you know, Modern Musician and stuff, where you can get that education to understand what you're doing. Cause if you know what you're doing, first and foremost, you're going to be able to, when you get an opportunity, you can walk in there and feel confident about it. Right. So if like, even to say you got a chance to work with a songwriter and the songwriter happens to have maybe a couple placements out there, you're going to know going in there like, hey, I need to do a split sheet. Let's, you know, make sure everything's fair. This is going to be the publishing splits. Make sure I'm signed up with BMI or ASCAP or CSEC or whatever. That some of those things are I probably had hundreds of thousands of dollars stolen from me, or even just that I didn't collect because I didn't know what I was doing. You know what I mean? So I think first and foremost, you have that now. You have some, you can go to YouTube right now and tell you how to copyright my music. You know what I'm saying? Like I had to go like get a book, like All You Need to Know About the Music Business or something. Or you have courses that you could take, you know, and they're cheap, you know? So those are first and foremost are the best opportunities. The second is you do have the internet and you have social media and stuff, and it doesn't hurt to reach out to people, but don't just reach out to artists, right? If you want to, like, I see a lot of people, even producers are like, oh, I reached out to, you know, Justin Bieber and I never got a response. I'm like, dude, first, Justin Bieber is not running his own, you know, his own messages on Instagram or whatever. First thing, try to find the manager, right? Try to find a manager or somebody close that is tied to him, and then maybe reach out to them and maybe give them an opportunity first. I always like to give value before. I don't just ask, right? I'm not going to say, hey, I got some beats. Can I send them to you? You know, I might be say, hey, I got some, you know, something I could do for you. I'm really good at graphics or something. If I do a cool graphic for you, would you mind listening to some beats or giving them to Justin Bieber or something? And Justin Bieber might be someone hard to reach out to. So I'll just give you an example. Maybe shoot a little bit lower, but and then if that doesn't work, then you could reach out to songwriters, right? Find the songwriters that write for Justin Bieber. They sometimes don't have the biggest following, and they're the ones that might reach out and be like, hey, it's cool. You know, send me some of your music. Maybe we can do some collaborations or something. You know what I mean? And people think like, oh, that's just too hard. And, you know, there's only like a few songwriters I can find, but I'm talking about one artist. Just think about all the artists out there and all the connections that they have to them. Just if you find one, just one connection, and they get to listen to your music, you just won. You know what I mean? So that's a big opportunity there. And then I'm a firm believer, if you build it, they will come. Everything we have pretty much is free, like social media and stuff. Now there are sites that putting up your music costs you maybe a monthly charge or something. But if you believe in your music and you have good music and it's kind of just going out there and blowing up, people are going to come to you. That's if you didn't hear anything from my story, I just was in my parents' basement, just making music by myself, sometimes in my underwear, right? And people would message me and come to me and say, hey, I'd like to work with you. I love your stuff. You know what I mean? I'm still a firm believer in that. Like, so many people are just like, oh, I got to get to the right record label. And I have to get, I'm like, you don't have to get to a label. Just build it yourself and people will come, you know? So I hope that answered the question.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super valuable. Yeah. There's something about that mindset shift from when you flip from like chasing to more like attracting,
yeah,
you know, and building something that, you know, and this definitely applies to marketing as well, like inbound marketing versus outbound marketing. But in terms of leverage, you know, if you reach out to like 100 people, that takes an enormous amount of time and energy. And you know, you start where you start. So like sometimes it's good to connect with people, yeah, and to reach out that way. But you know, the response rate is extremely low when it's unsolicited versus right. If you have, you know, an inbound strategy where you're providing value up front and the value is the thing that is attractive, then you focus on creating, you know, value and mm-hmm. and building a system around it. I also really appreciate the point that you brought up around how do you network and actually connect with some of these more established artists. Yeah. And you know, maybe the best strategy isn't to reach out directly to them because yeah, they're so inundated already with, you know, people reaching out and
exactly.
They have their own sources of trust, you know, trusted connections that they already have. And it does seem like there's, yeah, that's maybe an untapped opportunity is just figuring out who are the connections that they have to reach out to that maybe they don't have as much, they're not saturated with people reaching out to them. And so if you provide value to them, then you can start to build a relationship and start to network and connect with, you know,
exactly. It's the same thing as like when I lived in LA, it's just you meet somebody who happens to be the friends of this person. And then you end up saying, hey, I do music. They're like, cool, man. Oh, I actually am friends with this person. Like, I, you know, what do you do? I was like, oh, I make beats, bro. Give me some beats. I'll send it to my, you know, send it to him. That's I've gotten so much stuff by that. And I know a lot of people have gotten things like that of that nature, but now it's like everybody has Instagram or Twitter or whatever. Like now you can just reach out to them and like, but I said, but give value. Don't just, hey, I do music. Let me send you something. Like, it's just, I'm like, God. So, you know, and then some people like will message me and say, hey man, I'm a new producer. I, you know, and give me their story or something. And then I'm like, all right, that sounds cool. I'll listen to your beats. You know what I mean? And if they're really good, I might be like, hey man, I'll do a collab with you or something. No problem. You know? And not everybody's like cool. That. Not everybody likes to help people though. So I'll just tell you that right now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a core mindset shift. I think is extremely valuable when it comes to networking is what you described of you focus on providing value first.
Yeah.
And just that one shift that you do already puts you in the top, like 5% of people are reaching out because instead of it being like, gimme, or me, it's about providing value to them. And that just, you know, comes across very, really easily. I'm curious if you have any other recommendations for, like maybe we imagine, I know you get a lot of people reaching out to you, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is sort of the iconic, like worst reach out that you see over and over and over again, that is like the wrong way to do it versus like the best, you know, quality reach outs that you've received? That you receive. Yeah,
the worst is, you know, I'm the best and you need to work with me. Everybody that I know, I have a fan base. Everybody tells me I'm the shit or something, or like I am the shit and you need to work with me. And like, tell, you know, you're telling me I need to work with you. Right. It's it's just a different approach, or it's just like, you know, I mean, you know, how many times we all hear that, like, oh, I'm the best at what I do and you need to work with me and stuff like that. Or they'll insult you and say, oh, you got to be stupid not to work. <That's>, oh, man. I was like, all right, I guess I'm dumb. And then you have the people, like I said, that will come with either some value or say, hey, you know, I do this on the side. You know, it could be anything. It'd be like, hey, you know, this guy, he does like custom Nikes. He does like Nike Air Force Ones with like Gucci and Louis Vuitton shit on there. And I'm really into like shoes. So he reached out to me. He's like, man, I love to work with you. This is what I do as a side gig. And he sent me all this shit. I'm like, bro, like, yeah, I'm into that. I would definitely want to help you because he found something I was into. And I'm like, all right, I could definitely help you there because I'm into what you're doing. You know what I mean? Or it could be, you know, if you do graphics or, you know, a lot of artists don't understand. You're also a songwriter, right? If you write your own stuff, you're a songwriter. That's another thing you could do. Like sync placements is a huge, huge. I mean, there's so many jobs out there that pay up to like huge money. That all you have to do is just, you're creating a song, but for somebody else, right? And I know sometimes it's hard as an artist and as a producer, like, yo, I don't want to give this up. This is like mine. This is my baby. but you're going to lose that after a while. Sometimes you're like, all right, this is, I'm not using this. Like, here you go. So yeah, maybe lead off this. Hey, I'm a songwriter. I write choruses. I notice you sell beats. Like, why don't I do some choruses? Could I do a couple choruses for you just to, so you can hear them? If you like them, we could sell them together, you know? And now you're working with somebody that actually is working in the industry too. So if I make something that's, I think is huge with that person, I'm like, all right, I'm going to pitch this to whoever. Like, I just did Tech N9ne's album that's coming out here this year, and I did like 13 on there. And like, what if that one of those people reached out to me and I did a chorus and I happened to give that to Tech, you know what I mean? So I'd say that's the best, the value stuff, or, you know, or the story. If you give me a sad enough story, not, it doesn't have to be sad, but if you give me a cool story, you know, sometimes I read into it. I'm like, all right, man, I'm going to give this person a chance to listen to something. So not everybody's like that, but yeah.
Awesome. So I want to take things in a little bit of a different direction, because I'd be curious to hear your perspective on it. But right now, you were sort of in this age of AI and generative tools. ChatGPT came out, you know, a little over a year ago and changed the game. Midjourney for images, and now DALL-E 3 is incredible. Just about a week ago, Sora got announced with the video generation, and that's a whole can of worms in terms of like, high fidelity videos, especially in like a political year. It will be interesting to see what happens. But I'd be curious to hear your thoughts as it relates to like beat generation and musicians and us as creators. Like, I think there's a lot of fear right now that like, are we going to get replaced? And I'm curious what you see the role of musicians and us being creators and building communities. And potentially around creating things for like creating beats for other artists. What kind of impact does AI and generative tools make on this industry?
Well, first thing I was going to say is do not go into it with fear, because fear is going to make you not do your passion, right? You're going to just make an excuse not to do what you want to do, right? So yeah, of course you have that. I have it in the back of my head too. I'm like, you know, I'm going to embrace it, right? I've already have, like, AI has been around forever. It's just not where it is now, but even with beat making, like, we can go online and get like 50 million loops and change the instrument and do all kinds of stuff. That's kind of an AI thing. You know what I mean? Which was cool for me. And I was always like the guy who's like, I'm not using loops. Like, I'm a real producer. This is bull. And then found out like Timberland and Neptunes are using loops and shit. I'm like, I'm the idiot, you know, like sitting there doing all my percussion. I'm like, hey, that's a cool percussion loop. So I've always embraced stuff. If we feared everything, even in music that came along, then like streaming and like legal downloads, that would have killed all of us. We'd be like, I'm done. There's no reason. There's no more money out there, right? But I think passion keeps us going. Like, as far as like how it would affect me, I don't think it's going to affect me as much in like as far as like working in the industry, because I think people still want that home, that human touch, right? So people still want to get in the studio. And, you know, not everybody, but I'm saying like some of the bigger artists want to get in the studio. They want that producer to guide them along, or, you know, give them that production that's catered towards them. So I don't think that's ever going to stop with that. It might get a little bit worse. Some people might get some AI beats online. I think that's because you don't have the same type of connection. You know, we're talking through email or social media. I think that artists don't have, you know, they're not sitting there talking with you. So they might go to, you know, a beat AI or something and go make their own beat or something. And you know, if I don't know if they're going to do this, but I'm pretty sure AI is probably not going to keep the publishing on it either. So if as an artist, they're like, hey, I get 100% publishing because all I had to do is pay, you know, $20 a month to use this beat software that makes it for me. But I think we're far from beats being like so good that it's like, oh my gosh, I've heard a lot of them. So like, I have friends that have tried out this stuff and they're like, they sound like a little kid just making beats, you know what I mean? But I think one day they'll be there, but I still think it's going to have a human touch. It's going to have like a Timberland or somebody that's going to feed information to it and give it, you know, hey, this is how I create this. This is the instruments I use. And then you'll be able to like create beats around like maybe Timberland or Metro, but that might be a cool thing. What if it's like producer based AI where it's like, all right, you're getting Wishmaster stuff now, but it's like my software. You're still going to get my touch, but it's going to, you know, it might be monthly, or you're buying the software outright or whatever it's going to be. I still think the AI is never going to not have that human touch with stuff. I mean, eventually, of course, maybe 10, 15 years, it might just, you know, this, we're all screwed, but I embrace this stuff. I always have, you know, a lot of my friends they don't produce anymore because they didn't like how things happen. Even like, think about engineers. When Pro Tools came, a lot of them quit. They're like, I'm not doing this shit. Like, I'm an analog guy. And the guys that stuck with the Pro Tools or girls, they are the ones killing it. You know, they're the ones like, you know, the Mannies and stuff. They're like, yeah, do it all in the box. Like, this is easier for me. And it sounds great, you know? So.
Yeah, that's a great way to approach change. seems like that's one of the constants of life is like evolution and change. And it doesn't seem like it generally fares well for anyone that resists change.
No, it doesn't.
It's almost like that's the wrong side of the battle almost always.
Now we might turn into a world of like Terminator where, you know, they turn against us or, we, you know, I don't know if you've seen the movie WALL-E where everybody's overweight going on like these little scooters and, you know, that might happen. You never know.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully those are like red flags or warning signs for us to like help, you know, avoid, you know, that, you know, creating that. But I also think that there's like, you know, a beautiful thing about being human is that we can create things. We can create the future. You know, we can decide what do we want our lives to be like.
Exactly. And if you think about it, AI is going to be, you know, of course they're going to be able to create whatever, but there's so much music out there. There's going to be so many lawsuits. I mean, just think about AI. I don't think it'd ever be perfect and not be connected to some other song or something or make something similar where you're going to be able to do that. But I'm sure they're going to make AI software too. That's going to be able, I mean, I think that there actually already is, but it could basically go online and read every single song on there on YouTube on any platform and be able to break down the percentage of what was used from another song. It's crazy. So
that's already out there.
So
I think it's super interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think you can make the case that as humans, like we're all influenced by our favorite artists and, you know, it's not possible for us to look at the songs that we wrote and be like, okay, 7% of this came from, you know, Tech Nine, and you know, 20% of this came from my other favorite. It's, you know, because it's like we kind of like a recipe. We take these different pieces, but it creates something new, like different DNA strands, or like two parents like coming together, but they create a new child. And I think there's something interesting happening with AI too, where like it's kind of works in a similar way. Like they're starting to see these emergent properties that is greater than the sum of its parts. Like it's not directly like taking pieces, but it certainly was like influenced or inspired by it. And yeah, the idea that you could actually have like a percentage based, like, you know, this was 3.2% Coldplay is interesting.
It'll be easier too, because then like with lawsuits and stuff, you won't have to go to court and you won't have to have like human judges be like, oh, let's break this down. Like, oh, blurred lines. This is, you know, whatever. Now, you know, put through the software will give you exact percentages. Yeah. Here, 20%. And it'll be easier. Now we could at least rely on that and say, okay, all right, I owe 20%, not just I have to pay all this money out for the song, you know?
Yeah, that's super interesting. Yeah, like looking at it as a spectrum or like a scale, if you had like a percentage base where it was like, okay, this is just like 49.99% is like the amount that you can be similar, but you can't be closer than that. Or maybe it's like 20%.
Or you just be like Kanye West and just go sample whatever you want and don't clear it, you know? I don't know if you saw, there's like all these lawsuits coming out now, Donna Summers and Ozzy Osbourne and all of that. It's getting crazy. Yeah.
I mean, one point that you brought up that I think is really important is around the role of human creativity, even if we have these tools that allow us to like, you know, create things in an amazing way. Like it's sort of like, you know, just because you have a paintbrush that is a tool that allows you to like transform something into artwork or into the canvas, it's like a paintbrush and it still is like about you communicating what's in your brain to like to create something with it meaningful. And it's like the message, like what the artwork that you're trying to portray, that's the most important part. And so it does seem like these AI tools probably are moving us in the direction where it's much easier to become a creator. Like even people who aren't traditionally musicians or know how to play an instrument.
Well, if you think about auto-tune is AI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, auto-tune made a bunch of non-singers singers, right? And I mean, that was a huge, it still is. Huge trend for years of people using auto-tune and basically putting them in key, you know what I mean? But there's different types of, you have like the Futures and you have the T-Pains and all these different artists that are using it in their own way. So it's not like there was one person that had that sound, right? It was just everybody's using it, but they still had their own style to it. Like I said, there's still that human touch to it, right?
Yeah. Yep. So lean into it and bring, you know, who you are, bring your creativity, make it unique. And using these tools, you know, isn't something necessarily to be afraid of, but it's something to lean into. Awesome. All right. Well, one thing I'd love to do, and granted that we did overcome some technical issues at the beginning here, so I'm sort of knocking on wood that this is going to work as planned, okay. But I think it should work based on the way that we've set this up now. I'd love to invite our community, if you're here live and you have a question that you'd like to ask to Wish, feel free to click on your profile and raise your hand, and we'll bring you onto the stage. All right. So I see Vaz raise his hand. So let's bring on Vaz. Hey, Vaz, how are you doing today?
Doing wonderful. Hello.
Okay,
you know
me.
I always have questions, man.
Yes, you got it.
This is fabulous.
Oh,
listening.
My God. Woo, that is peaked. Sorry.
I was like, what is that?
Wishmaster, you know, I just put in the chat, you know, adapt and survive, refuse and lose. You know, technology is just a transition from one thing to another. And I really appreciate your advice about facing the fear. Just continue to do what you do. Keep on going. One of the things that what Michael's brought into our world, and into mine specifically, is this a mentor that will helps us navigate into building a dependent client base through various technologies. And he diligently works with his team to improve and adapt. I was asking, to hear what you were talking about being in your parents' basement. And I was just curious, you were kind of in the infancy of this technology and you persisted, and I'm sure you faced much fear. But now it's matured into where, you know, Beats have become an industry, which it wasn't before you. Or it was a very small industry.
It was a lot smaller.
And now Michael is actually pioneering, bringing the independent musician to a place, to the marketplace of building a community through the various tools. And not only is he giving us an opportunity to connect directly, but he has also started to encourage us to use some AI tools to help with our creativity. So not so much for me, but what advice would you give Michael and modern musician as he's trying to pursue and do this on behalf of all of us? And that's all I've got.
Yeah, for anything, I'd say
tomorrow, Mike.
I'd say Michael's actually doing that's exactly what he should do. He's embracing and telling you, hey, you could use this. Like even for me, I write a lot of my own emails, but I've been using ChatGPT a little bit just to like help me with like subject lines sometimes, or even rewriting stuff, because I'm like, you know, I'm just a producer. I'm not like this well-spoken dude. Right. So I'm like, all right, this is kind of cool. And if you think about it, even though I don't like it's going to hurt people's jobs. Of course, there's going to be people like, you know, but it's going to help your business as well, right? Because I'm pretty sure a lot of you guys are entrepreneurs. So just think about that. You don't have to pay somebody to do your copy or do this and do that, because you're going to have help so you can do it all yourself. So if anything, I'd say what Michael's doing is awesome, because some people are going to shy away from that. And he's like, no, we need to do this ourselves. And everybody, you know, he's saying, hey, you try this tool. This tool is going to help you here. Because if you think about it, we only have so much time in a day. So if we spend all our time doing, like, let's say, like if I spend too much time like reading all my emails and then, you know, having to deal with some kind of issue with audio or something, I won't have time to create anymore. So now it's like he's basically giving you stuff where you can actually have more time to create, right? And that's what we all want to do deep down, right? That's what we're in this for. So I said, go,
man.
Michael.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the question, Vaz. That was a very selfless question for you to come in here and ask on behalf of a modern musician and what we're all doing here. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting time to be alive as it relates to AI. And you know, just yesterday we had a chance to really geek out and talk about Neuralink and like neural interfaces and Vision Pro, like some of the 3D stuff that's happening right now. But I do want to kind of bring things back to a point that Wish brought up early on that I think is extremely important. And it's something that having the opportunity to have a lot of conversations with successful people like Wishmaster, you start to see some of the patterns that come up over and over and over again. And I really appreciated the lesson that you shared earlier about trusting yourself and trusting your own way. And like ultimately, yeah, it is extremely helpful to have references and have a role model. And it's, I mean, it's probably the best way to start out, you know, just start out with a reference. But there is sort of a shift that needs to happen at a certain point where it's like you do trust yourself and you don't necessarily believe anything anyone says at face value. Like it's sort of about experience and it's about like trying it. Because sometimes even if something works for someone else, it may or may not work for you too. So I just encourage everyone that's here as well to like everything that I say, everything that all of our guests say, like this is one perspective or one map and it's extremely valuable. But also like Wish brought up at the first, at the beginning of this interview, it's really important to find your own way and to kind of create your own map and you'll discover things that are unique to you. And then, you know, you can share your map with other people as well. But yeah, it's important not to believe any one thing is like, you know, the ultimate truth.
And just to add on to that too, is you might create music now that maybe is like, maybe it's getting like a little bit of hate or something now, but maybe in 3 years, it's going to be like the number one sound, right? Like if you think, I'll use Nelly as an example. Like he did an album called, his first album is called Country Grammar. And when they first put it out, everybody's like, this nursery rhyme. I mean, this dude's doing gangster shit to nursery rhymes. And they didn't like buy into it. It wasn't until 3 years later when it's got picked up by a label and now and then turned out to be 20 million records sold, over 20 million records sold. So just because it's happened to me too, where I've had production where people are not really into it, but like a couple years later, they're like, damn, this is crazy. Like you have your own sound. Like, dude, I did this 2 years ago. Like, you know what I mean? Sometimes that happens. So just keep that in mind.
Super interesting. Awesome. Well, hey, let's go ahead and let's wrap up the interview for today. So let's do a virtual round of applause to Wishmaster for taking the time to come on here and share some of his insights and lessons that he learned. This is awesome. Appreciate you, sharing your story and also talking about the future and kind of where things are moving towards. For anyone that's interested in connecting more or going deeper into what you offer in terms of, you know, beat creation and all of your resources, what would be the best place for them to go to connect more?
I said, just go to my website, just wishmasterbeats.com, WISHmasterbeats.com, or just Instagram, wishmasterbeats. So
awesome. All right. Yeah. Hey, it's Michael here. I hope that you got a ton of value out of this episode. Make sure to check out the show notes to learn more about our guest today. And if you want to support the podcast, then there's a few ways to help us grow. First, if you hit subscribe, then that'll make sure you don't miss a new episode. Secondly, if you share it with your friends or on your social media and tag us, that really helps us out. And third, best of all, if you leave us an honest review, it's going to help us reach more musicians like you who want to take their music careers to the next level. The time to be a modern musician is now, and I look forward to seeing you on our next episode.